The Steve Cochran Show is live from the Iowa caucuses. Nobody covers 2016 like 720 WGN.
Good morning, live from Des Moines, where it's caucus day. And Andrea has a Hillary hangover after being out with Hillary, Bill, and Chelsea late last night.
We were at a Hillary rally at Lincoln High School in Des Moines.
Right.
Great turnout.
Right, big turnout. And Hillary spent most of the time bashing Republicans. Didn't mention Bernie once, I don't think.
No, didn't hear any mention of Bernie.
But it's a couple of interesting observations just rolling in here first. Didn't you think when we got here there would be streets lined with festivals and banners and parties and things? Pat Brady's here. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning.
And it was interesting because you got to town, and the first thing you noticed was free parking.
Yeah, it's on a Sunday. I figured I was going to hit for $30, and they said free on Sundays.
Right, and you were going to give anyone $30.
Yeah, well, it's free parking on the street today, too.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So the first thing we're going to do is sit down with the mayor and the city council of Des Moines and go, listen, next time you do this, here's a couple of ways to make some money. Because last night it seemed like there were opportunities for bands and festivals and things. You had the world's media gathered, and literally everything rolled up. We had trouble finding a place to have dinner because restaurants were closed at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, how about that? We found a little pub right by our hotel.
Yeah.
Had dinner there. But, yeah, you're right. You'd expect the streets to be packed and streets closed off. It would seem pretty dead.
Well, it's usually 25 below on this day.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. That is true. Yeah, I remember being here in 2012 where it was about 25 below. But the day's finally arrived, and that's a thrill to the people of Iowa, one, because the media is leaving, and two, because they finally get a chance to decide the 20% or so that will show up to do this, unless it's more, because everything you're going to hear today is about turnout. And if the turnout's high, that seems to be favoring, Trump. Trump certainly on the Republican side, but who's in favor on the Democratic side?
Bernie.
Because the kids are coming out, right?
Yeah. Is Trump for real? Can Bernie stop Hillary again here in Iowa, and can the so-called Marco Rubio surge actually happen?
Yeah. Marco Rubio last night was not ever present, but he certainly has been in Iowa. He's made a nice run recently. He got the endorsement of the Des Moines Register, and the Saturday night Des Moines Register poll, the last big poll, was Hillary and Trump by a skosh, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Hillary up 3 and then Trump up 5 or 6.
So we'll get over all of these folks, and we'll talk about all these folks. Well, we'll certainly get over them, but we'll talk about all these folks. But let's talk about what you're going to be doing this morning with the big story.
Yeah, I'm going to be – well, the first big story we're going to have at 6:30 is a lot of sound from the Hillary rally last night. She had a very big introduction from former President Bill Clinton, her daughter Chelsea here as well. And I think she gave a very good speech. She was late for it, but
I'm
telling you,
tremendous.
This was it. We heard that they did not sell this rally out. Not that you just need to get tickets and pre-register for this. We got there. It was packed. And
her
couldn't
crowds
get in.
Have been smaller.
Yeah.
Last night,
it was a big deal. It was interesting. Pat mentions the young vote for Bernie Sanders. I agree with that, but last night there was a lot of young people, a lot of women. A lot of union workers.
No, they
knew they were there for Hillary. A lot of hashtag I'm with her signs. So then after the 6:30 big story, that I'm going to hit the streets of Des Moines, and I'm going to be at a coffee house, Java Joe's, for 7:30.
And that's just so you get coffee for you.
That's just so I can buy coffee for everybody else. But that's okay. Where a lot of the candidates will be making appearances and getting their morning coffees. They call it a photo op.
But you're going to be running around the streets of Des Moines.
I am. Yeah, I'm going to find different hangouts where the candidates are going to be, and we'll be reporting big stories from all across the city center.
And Pat is actually at the media hotel, so he'll have stories of how he was accosted by various famous media members last night.
Well, I'm at the Trump hotel, too, so
I
might get accosted.
Did you find traces of hair all over the lobby?
Yeah. Like my dog. Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, they're doing DNA tests on all of that. But we're very glad to be here. We want to thank our host, ABC News Radio, because Jeff and everybody at ABC News Radio have been great. Absolutely great. The full body massages were a little uncomfortable at first, but I got to tell you, when it comes from Wayne Fisk, it's very large hands, and it felt me, made me feel really good as a man. That's all I'm telling you.
We cannot concur, by the way.
Oh yeah.
We were not part of that.
Act like you didn't enjoy it.
Feeling.
It's 6:14. You want to take a break, or do we go straight to traffic here?
Sure.
All right, Mary's here. Mary, how are you?
I'm good. You guys sound great. Good to see you. How was the trip, by the way?
You know, it's a little longer than I thought.
Oh, it's 5 hours.
Yeah, I had the genius idea that we'd drive, and I swear in 2012 it was an hour and a half.
If you didn't stop every 10 minutes, you would have gotten here fast.
We stopped at the truck stop.
Eat. Yeah, are you guys okay? Did you kill each other? You're fine?
No, you know, it was nice, Kevin, and we were driving over a rental. In the rental, I actually rented an 18-wheel truck, and kept Kevin and Andrea far apart so they wouldn't fight.
It was a big car. I'll tell you, let me just say one thing, though, Mayor, to dispel any rumors, though. You guys always give women a hard time for talking about. You and Kevin were talking relationships.
What?
You guys were talking about clothes. You talked about all the girly things.
We did each other's makeup. We had a cleansing cry.
Good, Andrea. It kept you awake then.
I was in the backseat. I read the People, Mayor.
Oh, good.
You'd have been proud.
No, it's funny that, you know, anytime you're on a trip in the back seat, you're always going, what'd you say? What'd you say? What'd you say?
That was me.
This truck was big enough that Andrea was actually in a different area code. She was actually that far behind us.
She was texting
us from the back seat just to be a part of the conversation.
In my own little area.
We are live in Des Moines. Today is caucus day, and the caucuses tonight at 7 o'clock are a bit complex. It's not as simple as walking up and doing it. And we got to the hotel yesterday, and around town we were talking to a couple of locals, and everybody was just as nice as you would expect them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people of Iowa are really good, hardworking, great people. It's not a cliche. It's
right.
A fact. But a couple of people we talked to, and Pat Brady, I think you probably had the same experience, were saying, yeah, you know, I caucus every time, but I'm not doing it this time because, you know, I got to work or I got to do this or I got to do that. So every excuse you've used in Chicago or wherever you're listening in the country did not vote. Imagine adding another 2 or 3 hours to that process as opposed to rolling up to your polling place, going in and coming out.
Right.
So here's Pat Brady now with an explanation of how caucuses work. All right, so the Republican, we're going tonight, by the way. We're going to be at a couple of different caucus sites.
Yeah, we're going to go to one Republican up in Ankeny and one Democrat here in Polk County, which is a big caucus.
Big county.
So you do the Republicans, Andrea will do the Democrats.
Okay.
How do the Republican caucuses work?
Well, they go in there and they debate each representative for each candidate. They debate it, and then they actually file a slip and vote. So it's fairly straightforward for the Republicans.
But you do have to listen to each candidate's pitch.
Yes. Or the people that represent the – yeah, exactly.
All right, so for guys like Huckabee and Santorum and some of the folks on the lower end, do they even send someone?
Typically. We'll see tonight. We don't know.
Okay.
You know what I got? The overarching theme today is I talked to a lot of people last night and yesterday. People, smart people, have been here a long time, national political strategists. Nobody knows what's going to happen tonight.
Right. Because, as you said at the top, it's all turnout-based. Now, on the Democrat side, Andre, it's a little more complex.
It's a little more complex. I think it's a little more fun. You can definitely see the history in action. They've been doing this since the 1700s, and official caucusing, first caucus actually, was 1972 here in Iowa. And what they do is they go into a community center, a gymnasium, they go into a facility, a public forum, and they debate. They go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But the gimmick with the Democrat side is that they can pull you over, they can woo you from one side of wherever they are to the other.
It's clicks.
It
break
is.
Break up into little clicks.
It's actually
like the cool candidates over here.
Now, Andrea,
not a bad idea.
Me on to the Good Wife episode.
Wasn't that interesting?
Weeks
yeah.
Ago, which that was a Democrat caucus. That was pretty much.
It was fair. We were in a gymnasium last night in Lincoln.
All right. So if you guys are in a Hillary caucus and I'm standing over with Bernie's side because of my fabulous hair, you guys can go. No. Come over here.
And you can
come
say okay.
Here.
You can say okay, and you can walk over.
How do you entice me, Pat?
Well, the thing is, that's why the second place person in the polls oftentimes does well, because I may not get my first choice, but everybody come over here, you know, this is my second choice. So that's why it's different than the typical primary where you just straight voting.
The delegates are distributed proportionally on the Democrat side. Is that true on the Republican side as well?
I don't think it is. I think so.
But you have to have a 15% minimum.
To stay viable.
Yeah, to stay viable. Now, we're likely to see a couple of candidates drop off after tonight.
I may be wrong on that. Matt Strawn's coming on, the former chairman here.
I think the Republicans aren't proportional. I think the Democrats are, right? I don't know. We'll look into it. But at any rate, there is a bottom line number that you have to reach on at least the Democrat side, and it's 15%. There's some news that broke overnight. The Republicans can't not go a day without fighting. First off, I was really moved by Donald Trump's Bible. There's video floating around where Donald Trump holds up a Bible, which his mom gave him. And he connected spiritually with those of you, like me, who go to church most Sundays, when he said, "This is the Bible my mom gave me. Look, she wrote my address in it. It means a lot to me." That's pretty much the entire clip from Trump. Hey, it wasn't 2 Corinthians, but who's to question a man and his commitment to God?
They love me. They love me.
I talked to a longtime Republican operative last night who's been in the state for a month, who's been to a lot of Trump rallies, and his assessment was the Trump people are not typical Republicans. A lot of Democrats in there, and they are motivated.
Motivated and literally to the point where there are enough of them, they'll go to your house and pick you up even if you don't want to go. No, you are going to caucus. Now, Ted Cruz can't seem to get out of his own way in the last few days. He had the debate to himself last Thursday, and over the weekend now, he's in some hot water because he, or I should say his group, his campaign organization, sent out a thing called voter violation. And this voter violation mailer went out to everybody, and it looks like an official piece of government business. But the problem is, and think about the people of the Midwest in general, would you ever go to your neighbor and go, who'd you vote for last time? Did you vote? Would you keep score? No, you just don't do that.
No, it's like asking how much money do you make?
Right. So this thing not only has your voting record, but your neighbor's voting record and your neighbor's neighbor's voting record as well. And there's a lot of people who are pretty upset about
mm-hmm.
it. But Cruz's campaign says that people have done it before.
That's what they said. They said Obama did it, but we never heard about it. But it might backfire on him.
Yeah, it seems like there's been some negative blowback to that already.
You know, it might work at home when your voting record dictates what job you get. But I don't think it works here in Iowa.
Right. So if it's not Trump and Cruz, is there a chance you'd see a third place pop up, as in Rubio?
Yeah, and it's perception coming out of here, too. If a Rubio does a mid-20s or low 20% in a third place, that's a win for him. But he comes in, you know, low teens, that's a loss for him. But there's a lot of talk that he's got a lot of momentum. And we'll see. There's always a surprise here. And even that Des Moines Register poll, which you talked about, which is usually the most accurate, it only had it wrong once, and that was the last time.
Exactly, yeah. So the Des Moines Register poll is pretty much the Bible that everybody goes by. As the folks go to the polls, go to the caucuses tonight, the storm that was scheduled to hit that we thought was going to be a major problem now looks like it's going to miss almost completely, but there's still a threat to the western part of the state and some of the folks there who might caucus. If you think about it, folks a little bit older who are involved in the process may want to just skip it, not go out and deal with it.
And that's the more conservative part of the state, the western, northwestern part of the state, very conservative.
So that wouldn't help Ted Cruz then?
No, any mm-hmm. of the conservative candidates. And there's just, you know, Santorum, Huckabee, Cruz, that could affect him. I saw that in South Carolina in 2008 where it snowed up in the conservative areas, and it really hurt down in South Carolina. It really hurt Huckabee.
Yeah, snow in South Carolina, they won't go out for months.
No, right? But that's the opposite. When we checked into the hotel, the lady at the front desk had caucused last time for Obama, and they really get into it. And she said that it was snowing that day, and, you know, they had put their boots on. They really, those who do caucus really, really get into this.
But again, if it's 20%, that's probably not enough. And if it's 20%, that probably favors somebody like Cruz. It might even favor Rubio, but I would think Rubio would be helped by the younger voters coming out as well, or not?
It depends. I mean, I've never seen an election or a caucus like this where I get different opinions from everybody that's been here.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows what young votes coming out means. And Eric and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Trump is swimming in everybody's lane, Democrats, Republicans, so we don't really know what the turnout means. And the last two, three cycles of the polling has not been accurate.
We'll come back for the big story in a little bit. Andrea and Pat both smell like Bill Clinton's cologne, so I don't know what happened last night at the gymnasium at the high school.
He was really working that crowd. He stayed longer than she did, shaking hands, taking pictures.
Whatever you two call it is fine by me. It's none of my business. But Chelsea and Bill and Hillary were there. Mm-hmm. And I understand Hillary met her granddaughter last night.
Yes, she did, yeah. She brought her granddaughter but left her at the hotel with the babysitter. So the granddaughter didn't show up at the rally, but she is in Des Moines. She passed her around the whole crowd for everyone to hug.
Yeah. I would do it with mine. We'll come back with a big story in a moment at 720 WGN. We're live in Iowa.
Woke up after midnight, both my neck and arms were sore. On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call. The WGN hotline. I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Live from Des Moines,
I've got a stomach pain that's low.
Caucus Monday.
And
Dr. Kevin Mose joins us now. And Dr. Mose, we have survived the evening in Des Moines, and we're ready for caucus day. Will you be caucusing?
Yes, I will be caucusing. I'm going to go to my neighbor's house and tell him who I'm going to vote for. I think that's how it works, right?
Well, you know what? That could be like, you know, it's like play the game at home. It's the home game of caucusing. You just go by your neighbor's house and you have a discussion, and then you tell them what you're voting for. It's good practice.
I thought you said it was carcassing.
No, carcassing would be different.
Yeah.
All right, so I know you and I have talked about this on the golf course and various other places. The effect of the Affordable Care Act on health care by way of hospitals and doctors, it's significant, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very significant. You know, we have talked. It's the individuals with those chronic illnesses that couldn't get care. That's the people who had the biggest impact, that has allowed them to get care, that at least it is somewhat affordable prior to where they couldn't get care at all. But it still has some faults, and it still has some things that need to be corrected.
And among those faults are high deductibles and higher premiums for just about everybody. Maybe not so much losing your doctor. A lot of doctors are available in the same networks, but it might cost you more to see them. But it also, there are a lot of doctors getting out of the business because of the insurance consideration. So there's a lot of tentacles to this.
There are. And, you know, you hit on probably the biggest one, and that is the deductible. You know, when Obamacare first came out in 2014, you saw a lot of people going to the silver plans. So just to give people a little background, there are multiple level plans named on metals, obviously. So the bronze plan is the lowest plan, then the silver plan, the gold plan, platinum plan. So a lot of people went to that silver plan, and those are the individuals with chronic illnesses that knew what their medication costs were, that knew what their total medical costs were, and they did the math to find out that that's the plan for them. At that time, when we first started, the fine for not getting insurance was only $95. So a lot of people held off and said, you know what, I'll pay the fine. This year now, that fine has gotten up to $695, and now you're going to start, at least in my opinion, it'll be interesting to see if the stats come out, you're going to see a rush to the bronze plans. All those individuals who have held off and paid the fines, and now it's gotten to a point where, hey, I'm not going to take that fine, I'm going to get insurance now, but I think it's going to be at that lower level with a very high deductible.
Yeah, and to go back to the deductible piece of this, generally speaking, the common knowledge, correct me if I'm wrong, is when you're younger and healthier, you can roll with a higher deductible, but when you're older, you want to have a lower deductible because you're going to use the insurance more.
That's exactly it. The people that are young and healthy thinking, you know what, I didn't go to the doctor at all last year. The chance of me having to pay a $6,000 deductible, I'm not worried about that. As you age more, the chance of you paying that deductible or getting hit with a catastrophic illness definitely increases, and that's where you still have to figure a lot of these people are saying, am I going to put better food on my plate? Am I going to pay my rent? Am I going to pay my heat? Or am I going to pay that lower deductible and roll the dice that I don't get sick again?
When we come back from the traffic, a couple of questions for you, because the various things that we've heard on the Republican side, and Pat Brady told me if I'm right about this, are to open up health care and open up the insurance game where you could buy insurance across state lines.
Yeah, that's exactly. The politics of it, though, the Obamacare did not have one Republican vote on it, so this was a total Democrat bill, and a lot of the things that the Republicans wanted, like portability and things like that actually ended up the bill, they would have agreed on, but... So it was a pretty partisan bill.
So if interstate insurance buying is helpful to hospitals, and what do we do? What are some simple things you hear amongst hospitals, not just yours, obviously, at Northwestern Medicine Impact every day, but things you hear from doctors in the hospitals around the country that they're saying, well, it'd help if we did this or that. That's what we'll take up with Dr. Mose in a moment. Again, he's here prior as a sponsor by Northwestern Medicine Impact every day. Live at the Iowa caucuses in Des Moines with ABC News Radio, it's Steve Cochran, 100 Arrows. Pat Brady's here. Chuck Todd will join us after 7 o'clock before he does the Today Show. And we'll talk to Chuck. He's a regular guest, as you know, week to week, if you listen. And we've got lots of people coming up as well to check in with around here. You know, we've had the candidates get pitched to us in a bunch of ways. And, you know, Senator Santorum wanted to come out and get to know. We've heard from everybody at this point who we want to hear from. I mean, honestly, if Trump swings by, we'll talk to him. But I would rather hear from the people of Iowa that you're going to go out and see in the big story and talk about what we know to be true about everything that's gone on, like in the case with Dr. Kevin Mose, who joins us now. You go around to these hospital meetings, Doc, and you talk to other doctors and other administrators around the country. What, because I'm not a believer in blow up all of Obamacare and start over, because I have no faith in Congress. I have no faith in Congress being able to get anything done at that point. And there are people who are benefiting from for having insurance for the first time in a long time, if maybe not forever. So, or maybe they never had insurance. So because of that, I don't believe in this repeal Obamacare stuff. But there are certainly problems with it. So how do we make it better for hospitals?
No, you know, there are problems. But like you said, there are some very good things about it. You know, we as a country need to get back to preventative medicine. Instead of treating illness, we need to get to a point of preventing it and identifying it much earlier. And Obamacare takes care of that. It pays for cancer screening. It pays to have those routine physicals. Those are covered benefits for everybody on every plan. And that's really important, because if we can treat illness, identify illness early, or prevent illness, we're going to see decreased lower costs, obviously. I think, you know, some of the issues that we have is, you know, as Pat said, you know, the portability of insurance across state lines. And we all know, if you took a class in statistics or if you know anything about insurance, it's all about the volume in the population so that you can diminish your risk over a larger population.
Right.
It doesn't take an actuary to do that. So when you keep it small and you keep it within the state, you're going to also have a couple things. One, you're going to have a similar population, and two, you're going to have a smaller population. So as we look at it, what we would really like to do is to make sure that we can allow this to be more affordable. The way to do it to be more affordable is one of two things. You're going to lower your risk so that you have more people in it, which is either going to allow you to lower your premium, or it's going to allow you to offer more services at a lower deductible. That's going to be the big win. Hospitals have won, I would say, in some things, because some of these individuals with catastrophic illness that would get bills of millions of dollars, now a great portion of that is going to be covered. But it's the day-to-day guy who still can't afford insurance that the problem is there.
Well, like most, pardon me, most empty political promises, blowing up Obamacare, repealing and replacing is not going to fix it. But then the Bernie Sanders thing on the other side is to go back to probably what we should have done initially, which was fix Medicare. But I don't know the upside to going back and reinventing that wheel now either, or maybe there is for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, and Medicare is going to be a problem as we advance. Look at baby boomers, 10,000 baby boomers every day being put onto the Medicare dockets. I'm sorry, that math is not going to work after a while. An individual, something's going to have to happen where that shift is going to be pushed back onto the patient, or it's going to go bankrupt. So I'm not sure what the solution is there, but something is going to have to happen. And we have a lot of people who are coming into that senior retirement age that are planning on Medicare, and Medicare at a cost that they can afford now. So if that's going to change, we need to start changing that now so that people that are 5-10 years from retirement can make those financial adjustments so that they will have coverage as they age.
Hey, Doc, this seems the discussion's all on the cost and the insurance side. Has this affected the treatment? I mean, how good the treatment people are receiving?
Well, I don't think it has yet, Pat. You know, we haven't gotten to a point where we're rationing care. We're still treating patients very appropriately. I think a couple issues there. Is it going to slow down technology in this country? Is it going to slow down drug advancements in this country? That's possible. But I do think that as we start to age, the population ages, and hospitals don't have the funds to reinvest back into the community to make sure that we have all the equipment and the newest and greatest technology, we will start to see a decline in some of that. I think that's probably going to happen over the next 10 years, not something that's going to happen tomorrow, but certainly the plan or the forecast would look like that.
As we go forward with this and we come to the two nominees and then the conventions of the summer and obviously the election, how big a story is healthcare going to be going forward?
Personally, it'll be interesting to hear what Pat says. I personally think it's going to be huge. You know, I think you
but
have for, Hillary.
But my point is for both parties.
Absolutely.
Because okay. I think even if Hillary is the nominee, and certainly at this point we expect her to be, but if Hillary is the eventual nominee, she has to address people's concerns about it. Because it's not just a Republican concern. There's a lot of Democrats out there concerned about the deductibles they're paying and everything we've already discussed here.
Yeah, the effects are hitting me and other people. And so it will be. I still don't think it's going to be a number one issue. That's going to be national security and foreign policy. But because a lot of this has been litigated already for the last 25 years,
right.
It'll be top two or three issues, I would suspect.
Couldn't agree more. And look at, you know, look at even people saying the minimum wage should be raised, right? So if you take a family of four, 200% of the federal poverty level is about $48,000. There's a lot of voters who sit in that area right there that are living paycheck to paycheck that don't have $2,000, $5,000, $6,000 in a bank account to pay for a catastrophic illness. So that should come into play. I mean, if I was a voter and I lived in that federal poverty level and didn't see commerce growing, didn't see a lot of growth, and didn't see my chances for that improving, then, boy, my expenses every month is something that I'm going to be looking at, and how that candidate's going to impact that.
All right. Thank you, my friend. Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, Central DuPage Hospital. You got big plans today?
You know what? I'll probably watch this a little bit. What? It starts. Results start to get down around 7, so that'll.
Well, it's an interesting thing going on with technology tonight. Microsoft is on the hook for all of this, and Microsoft has set up the media center here, and we like what we see.
Oh.
But Microsoft is going to be returning the numbers tonight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go to either the Democrat or state Republican state party sites, you get up to the minute results.
Right.
Not different than past years.
So cool. Microsoft's on the hook to make sure they get it right. Rick Santorum still thinks he's going to win in the end.
Well, you guys travel safe, too, because you're going to have a storm, I think, tonight as well, right?
I think we're going to be okay. But then again, I'm not that
We're cautiously optimistic.
Thank you, buddy.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
Dr. Kevin Most, Central DuPage Hospital and Northwestern Medicine, impact every day.
WGN is live in Iowa, and the race to decide who will lead the greatest nation on earth is on. Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
We're live in Des Moines. It's caucus day. You can smell it in the air, can't you? That is nothing like a fresh caucus. Chuck Todd joins us, NBC political director. Frankly, he's the talent. He's the brains. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Good morning. I'm just here to make WGN great again. Let's go.
Gosh, I thought it was going really
remember
well.
Remember what the G is for. This is very Trumpian, right? The G, world's greatest newspaper. Let's go, right? Trump would love it.
I really thought we were doing well. You know, the ratings are good. We're number one. But, you know, you could be right. We could be better. We need hats.
Always. We need hats. That's right.
Where are you right now?
Right now I am at a location called West End Salvage. This is where I did meet the press yesterday.
Yeah, with the custom-made furniture.
It is. This. First of all, don't come down here unless you bring some money. It's really cool. It's both actual vintage furniture and then stuff that's made to look at. It's a phenomenal place.
And is that where you're doing today's show today?
Stuff. That's exactly right. It's our sort of NBC little headquarters for Des Moines.
I know you, because I saw the show yesterday, and I know you've been running around for a few days talking to locals,
mm-hmm.
and I think the thing that folks in Chicago and around the country are listening, and I mentioned this top of the show, it's no different than when you vote, except you add an hour and a half or 2 hours or 3 hours of commitment, and now you get a pretty good explanation about why the turnout is not maybe what you would expect it to be, and big turnout is the key today, right?
No, it is, and it's, you know, it's about who's committed, right? It's about when people will criticize Iowa shouldn't have such an outsized role, but I appreciate what Iowa forces candidates to do, right? You find out, you know, who's got an ability to create a following, and frankly, if you're vying to be the head of your political party, well, this is a good way to find out, you know, do you have the ability to lead? Do you have the ability to get people to sit in a community center and listen to speeches before you get to vote? The Republican side's a little simpler. You do actually get to cast a secret ballot. The real commitment is what the Democrats do,
right?
Where, you know, you publicly have to say who you're for, which is, you know, that's uncomfortable to some people. That's why a lot of people don't show up. They feel this. You know, a lot of people want to keep their vote to themselves. Because of how, you know, controversial talking politics could be. So that makes it that much more. So that's why I find it an interesting test, because you're trying to show that you can lead people and make people proud to support you. That, to me, is step one to becoming a leader of a political party.
And speaking of whether or not you've got the right stuff, you were tough on Ted Cruz yesterday and asked him all the right questions. And
mm-hmm.
he's thin-skinned in a different way than Trump. If you look at Trump the wrong way, he'll suddenly hate everyone, including your own mother. But
the next day he wants to win your, he wants to get you back.
Like, yeah, he does.
He would trash you, but I know you want to be a good guy, or I know, you know, he has this incessant need to make you like him. Cruz doesn't have that incessant need.
Well, you know, what's funny is I think it was the Atlantic. There was a piece this weekend where they talked to Harvard. They talked to, I think, Oxford and Cambridge and some of the world's leading psychoanalysts who all said, oh yeah, Trump. Textbook narcissist, this close to a psychopath. And it's exactly what you were describing. He hates you 1 minute, and then he wants you back the next. He's your crazy high school girlfriend.
No, he's well. All right, I am not. I somehow the NBC standards people won't want me signing onto that.
But I took you down the road, though, didn't I?
You really did. You know, this is always the danger with you, Steve. I tease, but no, it's true. He is. And I think people have this attachment to Trump that's the same way. You're like, oh man, he's a bad boy. I don't know if I want to bring him home, and yet I can't kick the addiction. I got to go out one more time because one thing about him, you always have an eventful time. It's always a good time.
Well,
it's always an event.
And to get back to the Ted Cruz piece, because I thought your questions are great for Ted Cruz, he seems more sensitive because Trump certainly got in his head with the birther stuff.
He did.
And you asked him some very simple questions, but direct questions yesterday about basically, are you tough enough to do this?
Well, that's, I have to say that it was funny. It was just sort of that something that hit me as we're going through all these different questions, like, wow, can this guy take a punch? And, you know, Trump knocked him silly for a while. But that's, I'll have to say, if Cruz does pull this out tonight, I do think that actually tells us something about him. That, you know what, he can take a punch. And he will be the first guy in this field to have taken a Trump punch and survived. That's not an insignificant development if that's the result tonight. And I can tell you the Cruz people are amazingly confident about their chances tonight. I admire that. Because so many times, listen to what Marco Rubio said to me yesterday, right? Well, what do you have to do here? Well, we have to do well, whatever you guys think. It's like, no, what do you have to do? You talk to the Cruz people, they know they have to win.
Right.
They know they're not going to be the nominee without winning Iowa. And so they make no bones about it. You know, at that point, you're like, well, at least good for them for being self-aware and for not trying to BS us on the record.
I know we only got a couple minutes here, but I want to get Pat Brady. And Pat Brady, former RNC director of Illinois, but really a decent well-grounded human being who has some opinions.
Knows his reputation well. Yeah, knows reputation
well. Yeah, I know you know Pat. Yeah.
Right.
All right, Chuck, I'm putting you on the spot. You are the smartest guy in the room. What is going to happen tonight?
Look, I'm skeptical that we're going to see a surge in turnout. All right? I have not. There's no – we haven't seen a massive increase in voter registration. We haven't seen a massive increase in first-time caucus goers, even when you start looking at them in the polls. So I am skeptical of that we're going to see this surge statistically. And yet, all this money that's been spent here, all this energy, all this national attention, and part of me thinks, why aren't we going to see a surge, at least in turnout on the Republican side? So, look, I think Cruz's biggest problem is Ben Carson. Ben Carson has a devoted 10% following, and if Carson really is at 10, as the polls show, then I think Cruz cannot win.
And it's supposed to snow up that part of the state.
Right?
I'm sorry.
What's that?
It's supposed to snow up in that part of the state today.
Yeah, the conservative western part of the state.
When's it start? Look, western Iowa snow, great for Ted Cruz. Okay? Great for Ted Cruz. You know, I sort of joked with the Cruz campaign. I said, you know, if you're as evangelical as you say and you're as close to God as you say, then you can get this snowstorm to come a little bit sooner. You know, let's move Mother Nature here for you, right? You know, nobody would benefit more from a snowstorm than Cruz because his folks are, I think, are the most devoted. But I do think his biggest obstacle is the fact there is 14% of the evangelical vote being split up between Carson, Huckabee, and Santorum. He can't afford to lose that much and overtake Trump. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton has – her operation is Obama's 08 operation. It's not hers, thankfully for her. But and it's a pretty – I think that they are going to do things to Sanders tonight that's going to shell shock them. The way the Democratic system works, it's a little bit different. It's not secret ballot.
Right.
And there's a lot of gamesmanship. So there are ways Clinton may help O'Malley. Clinton supporters may caucus for O'Malley in some places as a way to deny Sanders precinct level delegates. And people are probably wondering, well, how does that work? Pat, I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah, we're from Chicago. We know how that works.
Yes, well, there's that. Okay, I wouldn't go there. But, yes, there's a way to game the system. Obama did this to Hillary 8 years ago. Obama, you know, more people came out to support Clinton in 08 than John Edwards, but Obama orchestrated things
right.
In some places where he had, you know, he had plenty of supporters to win the delegates he needed, so he sent some of his people to help Edwards as a way to make sure to deny Clinton delegates. So, I know it's a little my point is I think the Sanders folks have no idea what's coming. More people may come out to support Sanders tonight, and yet Clinton could walk away with a majority of the delegates.
I heard the Little Rock people in town, too. Is that true? Some of the old guard?
Oh, some of them are. By the way, that is something else to keep an eye on. If Clinton loses tonight, you're going to see a massive shakeup in her campaign. They're going to blame the staff when ultimately, as someone who's a defender of the staff says, if she loses tonight, it's still on her because she still hasn't figured out a good explanation on emails.
It's the world's longest plane ride from here to Manchester.
It would not be good.
It can be, yes.
And it was a bad email weekend. Let's go on this, Chuck. You know, the thing that we can't quantify, and the people of Iowa are no different than the rest of the country, and that's the apathy and the disgust with the process. The vast majority of Americans going, it's not fixable. And I got a life. I got kids that got to go do this tonight. I got kids that got to do that. The people that won't show up tonight just because they don't believe they can make a difference, and there's Iowans that feel the same way as the rest of the country in that regard, which is a shame.
No, there is. I mean, you know, look, you wish if this were the be-all, end-all of the process, I would argue, yes, we got to figure out another way. But, you know, when you take Iowa collectively, I actually think if we could make Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, these four states, I actually think we should hold all these contests on the same day.
Yeah.
Right? Rather, so that there isn't one state having undue influence, but at the same time, the unique aspects of each state that that provide it to sort of create a candidate that you need to lead your party, organization in Iowa, appealing to independents in New Hampshire, knowing how to court your political base in a place like South Carolina, dealing with a diverse electorate like Nevada. If you had it all on the same day, it would truly be a test of candidates to find out, boy, do they have everything that it takes to be the leader of one of the two major parties. So I think that would help people feel more comfortable about the role Iowa plays. But Steve, for your purposes, if you want to blow up the system, then you want Sanders, and you want the high turnout, and you want Sanders and Trump, because those two would be the way to blow up the two parties and get them to reboot themselves.
In my perfect world, we're all at the conventions later this summer, and it's a complete melee. It's just everything's up for grabs because
the journalists in me would love it. It's the only story I feel like I haven't covered in politics for like 25 years.
I'll bet.
Please give me a contested convention.
And again, don't lose sight, folks. The Democrats are just as tight as the Republicans, if not tighter. So we'll see what the Clinton campaign can pull off by way of the strategy Chuck was talking about. Always appreciate it, Chuck. I know you got to go to TV.
All right, Steve and Pat. Pleasure to talk to you, sir.
You too. Thanks, Chuck.
Steve Cochran, we are live in Des Moines. And again, thanks to ABC News Radio. Andrea has met some new friends on the street. She has the big story coming up in just a second. Pat, you and I were talking off the air a second ago, and Chuck, I think, alluded to this as well, about how all the rules have changed. For instance, all you hear about is evangelical Christians and the church go and find folks of Iowa over and over and over again. And while that's true, Trump is a hobby Christian, you know, with his – I just wondered yesterday when I saw him on the TV with the Bible his mom gave him, how long it took a staff to find that. Because I have a feeling it's not on him at all times.
I wonder who wrote the inscription.
And exactly. And Bernie Sanders is admittedly not tied to organized religion. You know, he doesn't go to temple. He comes from a Jewish family, but it's not a part of his life. I mean, so point being, and you brought this up, all the rules have changed.
All the rules have changed. We've got to see what happens tonight. Maybe they haven't. But if Trump wins tonight, then all the rules have changed because you're supposed to stay in a state like Iowa and talk to people. He's had one night in Iowa. Same thing in New Hampshire. You're supposed to stay and shake everybody's hand. And he hasn't done that. He's had these big rallies. Now those people got to show up in caucus. And if we talk this morning how difficult that can be, we'll see whether it happens. But if he wins, yeah, the rules have changed.
We haven't mentioned the guys down the slide that is the polling that came out, Des Moines Register on Saturday night. But Kasich and Bush, not even factors.
Kasich's not even here. He said his cake is baked. He's banking on New Hampshire. That'll be the next big test, but I think the rest of these guys is kind of an afterthought. It's going to be the top three.
Yeah, Bush, Christie, none of those guys. There's no reason to expect any of those guys to pull a John Edwards 2008 kind of surprise here, right?
No. That's not the conventional wisdom. But you know what? They're always wrong. They're always wrong going to this thing. You know, John Kerry in 2004. So we'll wait and see. But it's a very unusual year. And talk to anybody, we'll tell you that.
For sure.
It's from Iowa.
Dan Ampton coming up on the Bears. The new 30 for 30 is out. Is it today, Kev?
It's Thursday.
Thursday. The new 30 for 30 will be out on the Bears' 85 season, the greatest football team of all time. And Dan Ampton will be on talking about that. And, of course, talking about getting ready for the Super Bowl. The media day lunacy is tomorrow. Let's take a break. We'll come back, get your big story next on 720 WGN. Sponsored now by Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic. Andrea Darlis running around Des Moines. Here she is with the big story.
And, Steve, big story this hour. I am on the streets of Des Moines this morning, 4th and Locust, in front of a busy coffee shop. Now, the thing about the caucuses, it's all about the swag, meaning hats, scarves, headbands, wristbands, all kinds of unique items, I guess you could call them, with the candidates' names on them. So I ran into Mark Daniels from Springfield, Illinois. He's with me live now. And tell us what you are selling, Mark.
Hi, my name is Mark Daniels. I'm from Springfield, Illinois, the home of Abraham Lincoln. And I am marketing and selling candidate-specific yarmulkes in Republican red and in Democrat blue.
Now, how did you come up with that idea?
It was more or less an attention getter. It started with Donald Trump's divisiveness and hate mongering. And I was trying to think of a way to transform all this negativity into something positive and spiritual to bring the country together.
And ironically, you're sold out of the Trump yarmulkes.
Well, the best going yarmulkes are the Bernie Sanders, without a doubt. Second to the Hillary's, and then the Rubios are next.
Yeah, and we got you a couple of Rubios for you and Pat, Steve.
So, oh, excellent.
What caught my eye is Mark is literally one big giant walking billboard. So I see, you know, these giant yarmulkes coming toward me in the middle of the street, and I said, I need to talk to this guy.
Could you ask him is he Jewish?
Are you Jewish? Absolutely.
Okay, I didn't know you could hear me.
He can hear you. Okay, basically.
And I was going to ask you too, sir, if you could, have any of the candidates autographed any of these?
Yes. I have Jeb Bush that I'm wearing right now. I have Ben Carson. Donald Trump. I got a Donald Trump autograph, and I put it on the internet, and I sold him for $50, and that's about how much it's worth.
I love this guy. He can come on anytime.
He's great. He's great. And we want to just tell you about his website real quick, too, Steve. It's called weedouthate.org, and he went to a Hillary rally to give her a yarmulke, and she mentioned the website on the air.
Nice.
On her website, too. So, yeah, so this is just an example of anything you can buy down here. And down in Des Moines, we'll put some pictures on our website, too, and you can check these out. So far, this is the most unique piece of swag that I have seen.
Yeah, and by the way, we've already got it up, and I'm looking at the Jeb Bush autographed yarmulke right now. All right, more from you coming up, right?
You got it. Live in Des Moines, that's the big story. I'm Andrea Darlis. Back to you, Steve.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Sponsored by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy and dealers, it's Ham. Before we get to Ham, the 30 for 30 we've been hyping, ESPN story, the greatest football team of all time, the 85 Bears, includes this. Roll it.
3 decades have now passed since his crowning achievement. He once led men into battle, actual battle, risking their lives and his own. But he somehow saw this achievement as even greater. Back then, every word he spoke, they listened.
Let's see if we can find him the Chicago Bears Super Bowl ring.
These days, Buddy Ryan speaks through someone else. Someone who can put his thoughts to paper. The same way his own men did. And they resolved to save him all those years ago.
And Dan Hampton joins us now, sponsored by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. And I know from having conversations on the air and off the air with you about Buddy Ryan, how much he means to you. And I don't know if you've seen the 30 for 30 yet. I watched it. Frankly, Buddy steals the show.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm so happy that everyone kind of gets the, the gravity of the impact Buddy Ryan had on that football team. You know, and the part is that in an explosion, boom, the game was over. Everybody kind of, fragmented and went their own way, and Buddy went to Philly, and all the stuff that happened after the Super Bowl, the seasons and the loss in the playoffs, and Buddy was no longer a part of it, so he kind of faded away in a lot of people's minds. But when they came to me and wanted to talk about doing this 30 for 30, And, you know, come on, let's be realistic. It's been a long time, and we're kind of glad to be remembered, but you know, I think the whole narrative was that, hey, it was a great team, and Ditka gets a lot of credit, but right there, you got to put Buddy Ryan in that hand of guidance that, you know, put us on that path, and I haven't seen it, but I understand that they did a wonderful job of weaving Buddy into the narrative.
I think you're going to be pleased when you do, and Hamp's obviously a big part of it as well, because this was your team on that side of the ball. And I, knowing how much he meant to you, and knowing that the state of health has been declining for many years, I just think it's great that they made Buddy such a big part of the story. Again, the 30 for 30 premieres on Thursday. Before we go to traffic, give me one of your favorite Buddy Ryan stories.
He'd do crazy stuff. Like one night when Mongo come in kind of hungover, we got into the meeting, and he turns and looks at Mongo and goes, "Hey, Ming, I don't mind if you go out and get drunk, but don't take any of the players with him." And I mean, that was just Buddy. But you know, it there was nothing like playing for him. And again, you know, I hate to say it, but you know, he was such a big part of it. When he left, man, just a lot of the glow kind of left the building.
Well, I take a break, come back. Hamp and I will talk about, and Dave Ennett as well. And Dave, since I'm in Des Moines and you're there, just jump in and we'll talk all over each other. The audience loves that.
Oh, that always works well.
We'll come back right after traffic. More with Dan Hampton. Back with Dan Hampton, sponsored by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Dave Ennett's in the studio in Chicago, and we are live in Des Moines. Dave, say hi to Hamp.
Hamp, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I got to tell you, I'm kind of getting excited about this. We have so many different kind of, you know, associations with the game, this and that. Of course, we all look forward to seeing how our old WGN compadre Ron Rivera is going to do.
Well, if you look at this matchup, Hamp, and 2 years ago when the Broncos played in Super Bowl 48 against Seattle, I believe the final was 43-8. And I think there's sort of a feeling that this could be that kind of a game again against Carolina. Why do you think, if you do think, Denver can make this a closer game than they did 2 years ago against the Seahawks?
Well, and quite honestly, I'm not in the kind of mindset where I can try to make a defense for Denver. Defense, mm-hmm. I mean, they got the number one defense. Yep. Anytime you've got a defense, you've got a chance. Now, what is different about this Denver team from what it was 2 years ago? And how similar is Carolina with the Seahawks who they played? You know, you could make a lot of comparisons, but Peyton Manning is the wild card. He's not anywhere near the player he was 2 years ago, and to think that he can magically wave a wand and be able to make a lot of the throws that he was unable to throughout most of the season is going to be a stretch. I personally think that what happened 2 years ago, it was just, I mean, nobody saw it coming, and Denver just kind of was just completely discombobulated early on, and they never got back in it. I think this game will be pretty close the first half, but in the second half, Carolina's they're much better than a lot of people give them credit. Everybody's saying, oh, well, their schedule's soft, they had to play, you know, Atlanta and Tampa and all that. Guess what? Every game, every team in the NFL, they have good players. And the Carolina Panthers are a very, very good team. The one thing is, you know, we all know all this off-the-field stuff with Cam Newton. How much will his, his mental approach to the game be affected? It's got to be something, you know, when everyone is asking you a million questions and this and that, and we all know he wants to be a new type of iconic player and all that. So, it'll be interesting to see if he really, really wants to stay within the formula that's made them successful this year and not, you know, start trying to do crazy things once the game starts.
Here's the thing, though, Hamp. If that Denver defense can rattle Cam Newton, or maybe the better question is, can they rattle Cam Newton if they get to him often and early?
I don't think you're going to see Carolina try to get in that kind of game where they, you know, they put him in the seven-step drop and go conventional. They're going to run a lot of the read option. They're going to do boots and drags, do different things, letting him get outside the pocket. You know, two or three weeks before the end of the season, I can't remember exactly who it was. I think it was the Arizona game. Maybe it was Seattle. They were playing a very good team, and time after time, the Carolina offense was put in 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10. And every time they ran either a variation of a bootleg with a crossing route or the read option. And every time Cam Newton made the exact right play. So, like I said, I don't think they're going to try to get into a game where it's going to be, okay, we're going to take seven-step drop and see if Cam can, you know, look like the second coming of Johnny Unitas. No, it's going to be we know what we've done for 18 games now. This is what we do, and we're going to keep doing it.
Hey, Hamp, let me ask you about the story that broke yesterday about Calvin Johnson apparently deciding that at the age of 30 he is ready to walk away from the NFL. Are you buying it? Do you think this is going to stick?
No. No, sir. Quite honestly, he's one of the special players in the league, but this year he had to fight through a knee. And I got to tell you, after all those years of doing it, by the end of the season, it requires so much more, you know, spirit, emotion, and willpower to do it. Once you let him get the knee, operated on, surgically fixed, by April, May, he'll feel like a new man. He'll be wanting to come back. But right now, at the end of the season, you are drained and you're like, I've had it. But after a while, you know, you heal up and you're like, hey, I can still do this. I still want to do this. So don't buy into it. And by the way, if you had Caldwell as a coach, you may want to retire too.
Great analogy, by the way. Hey, before you go, one more Buddy Ryan story. And if you don't mind, I remember you telling me at one point that all the defense were either taking naps or something. And Ditka walked through the room and tried to take a shot at the guys.
Well, okay. You know, the meeting room was in the basement of Hallis Hall, and it was kind of cool down there. And we'd wear big, coats or sweat coats with hoodies. Sure. And anyway, you watch film, and the projector back then. See, it wasn't videotape. It was, the it put you to sleep. Anyway, we got to where we would get on the floor, and it wasn't just us young guys. It was Alan Page. I mean, Alan Page is in his 13th, 14th, 15th year, and he'd be on the floor, and would watch, but then all of a sudden you'd kind of conk out. And anyway, Ditka came in one day, and he saw us on the floor, and he told Buddy after me, he goes, what the hell are you doing? Those guys are sleeping on the floor. And Buddy goes, yeah, what? He goes, what are you letting them sleep? He goes, well, you want them to go to sleep? He said, I had a linebacker up in Minnesota one time, great player. I think it was Jeff Seaman or somebody. And they fell asleep sitting in their little chair, and he fell over, and it sprained his neck, and he missed a month of the season with a dislocated neck. So Buddy said, if you're going to go to sleep, lay on the floor so you don't hurt yourself.
It's just
and
more
you know
good.
What? Hey, guess what? If you knew as a professional how much of that film you needed to see, and, come on, we would watch the films over and over and over again. So, but that was Buddy. That was the way he looked at it. Whatever it takes to get you ready and to be the best you can be.
It's more good coaching. Thank you, Dan Hampton, sponsored by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy Dealers. We'll give you the Super Bowl predictions when Hamp rejoins us on Friday. We're back after this and back to Des Moines in a few on 720 WDGN, I think. Yeah, that's it.
The Steve Cochran Show is live from the Iowa caucuses. Nobody covers 2016 like 720 WGN.
Back live in Des Moines, and coming up in the next couple of hours before we wrap up this morning. Well, you know, Ro and Anna are going to stop by. Ro Khan and Anna Devlanos will be live here this afternoon, and they will they'll stop by in the 9 o'clock hour. One or the other, or both of them. Aaron Katursky from ABC News in a few minutes as well. State Senator Mike Connolly, give us some perspective. Tonight we're going to be at least one, if not a couple, different caucuses. If more than one caucus, Pat, a caucus eye. It's a caucus of caucuses. Yeah, exactly.
We are going to be in Aiken Eye, and I think Andre is going to go over the other one, the Democrat one.
And so we'll do the Republicans?
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be Matt Strawn's, his wife runs the caucus. It's supposed to be a good one.
Matt Strawn is the former RNC director for Iowa. He'll be with us here in a little bit as well, as we're actually getting some legitimate background on what's happening. But let me shift gears here for a second. Not that Jeff Toobin doesn't know anything about politics, because he does. Big Jeff Toobin fan, and nice to talk to Jeff again. As the O.J. Simpson project, for lack of a better description, is upcoming. And, boy, I just wish they'd promote it a little bit, Jeff.
You know, Steve, what can I tell you? They're good at their job over there at the FX Network.
They really are.
There's been a lot of promotions.
It's based on your book, The Run of His Life, The People versus O.J. Simpson. I think you have to be, what, over the age of probably 30? 30, 35, maybe?
Yes, maybe 30, 35 to have any firsthand memory. Yeah, that's true.
I remember.
One of the things I've discovered is even people in, you know, from their teens up, you don't really have to explain to them what the O.J. Simpson case is. It has
right.
occupied a place in the popular culture that is so secure that even people who don't have firsthand memories know what it is.
Do you agree that that was the dawn of reality television? Because I think there's so many different shades of reality TV sucking the life out of America that this was more a live documentary rolling out in front of us.
I think there's a lot to that, particularly the Bronco chase. I mean, the Bronco
yep.
chase is what elevated this case, for better or for worse, into a national phenomenon because it was this live TV event that everyone shared. Now, that is not reality television in the sense that Keeping Up with the Kardashians is reality television. But the Kardashians, I think a lot of people don't even know that the way the name became famous is that Robert Kardashian was one of O.J.'s lawyers, and David Schwimmer, who plays Robert Kardashian, explores that, and his family plays an interesting role in the miniseries. So I think you're right that in several different ways, reality television is born in the O.J. Simpson case.
Now, there's lots of theories on this, and obviously you explore it in the book, which the upcoming movie, is it technically it's a miniseries, right? Isn't it a two-nighter?
It's ten parts. It starts tomorrow on the FX Network, 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Central, for 10 Tuesdays in a row.
Okay, The Run of His Life, The People versus O.J. Simpson. By the way, you mentioned Schwimmer. Are you happy with the casting?
You know, it's like an old-fashioned all-star cast.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so great. I mean, John Travolta as Robert Shapiro, Cuba Gooding as O.J., Courtney Vance as Johnny Cochran, Nathan Lane as F. Lee Bailey. It's really an extraordinary cast.
Yeah, and Nathan Lane, it's hilarious to me because who's funnier than Nathan Lane? But I've seen the clips. It looks like he really pulls this off.
Well, you know, this is the thing, is that all the characters, these are not impressions the way comedians do impressions.
Right.
They really inhabit these characters, and they're complicated and they're interesting. I think Sarah Paulson, who plays Marcia Clark, will be a revelation to a lot of people because Marcia Clark was kind of stigmatized, stereotyped,
yep.
and there's complexity in her character that I think a lot of people won't have seen before.
Yeah, and there's talk of, there's a million theories about why it went down the way it went down and the racial divide and all of those things because everybody remembers where you were when you heard the verdict. But I keep hearing the term prosecution overconfidence, and I talked to all the principals in this, as you have, over the years, and including O.J. Simpson. And I never got the sense that Marcia Clark was overconfident, though I certainly thought the LAPD thought they had a slam dunk.
No, I agree. I don't think overconfidence was the problem. I think underconfidence was the problem.
Competence, right?
A competence, yeah. I think they made some, you know, dramatic errors. Perhaps the most famous is asking O.J. to try on the gloves, which certainly was something they all regretted. But ultimately, I think the racial issue trumped any trial issue. I think Johnny Cochran in particular recognized that if you put the LAPD on trial in front of an overwhelmingly African-American jury, given the history of the LAPD in Los Angeles, that was the most effective defense strategy. I think they were right. And I also think that's what makes this piece feel so topical because, you know, we are now in the post-Ferguson era where the whole country is learning about the relationship between African-Americans and law enforcement. And that's one thing that makes this story, though it's 21 years old, so rich and topical.
Well, that's the thing that really is striking, right? Because nobody will take cops back more than me. I defend cops completely and believe that cops deserve the benefit of the doubt. But in any population, you are going to have bad characters. And there are bad cops just like there are bad journalists and bad other people. But what have we learned in 20 years, Jeff? That's what I'm wondering. Because how are things different than what happened in the O.J. case between cops and African-Americans?
Well, I don't know how much we've learned. I think many of the issues are still present. You know, one of the things that is very different is technology. And we don't have, you know, people forget that during the O.J. case, there was no internet. There was no email.
Right.
And I would call my wife and kids every night on a payphone at the L.A. Criminal Courts building, which feels like, you know, stagecoach era.
Right. Try to find a payphone now.
Right, so that's an example of how things have changed. How things have not changed is the level of distrust that a lot of African Americans feel for the police, and the advent of cell phone videos, some of these police citizen encounters have been captured. Show why the level of distrust is where it is. So, you know, I agree with you. I'm a former prosecutor. I think cops, by and large, are great. But there are still a lot of problems out there, as we continue to see.
Before you run, Jeff Tubin, last word to Pat Brady.
Hey, Jeff. I was actually at the Justice Department trying a case across the street for the government when all that was going on. It was quite the circus. My question to you is, a guy that covered this, what was the impact of the television coverage on this? Because that was one of the first cases I'd ever seen that was actually on TV all the time.
Well, you know, that is a great question, and I think that's one of the sad legacies of the O.J. Simpson case, because I think, by and large, having covered many cases where there are cameras in the courtroom, the cameras don't matter. But I think they did matter in this case. The level of attention was so great, and Judge Ito did not do a good job controlling the courtroom, and I think that was in part because of the cameras. I think the cause of cameras in the courtroom was set back many, many years and continues to be set back because of the O.J. Simpson case, and I think that's too bad because I think, by and large, cameras are a good thing, but they unfortunately were not a good thing in the Simpson case.
It's The Run of His Life, The People versus O.J. Simpson. I'd recommend you get the book, and certainly you'll be able to see the series. 10 Tuesdays, starting tomorrow, The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story, has it for you, and congratulations on it, Jeff. I know the whole process of having a book optioned and then going through the Hollywood mill has got to be a separate book unto itself. But as I said,
you know what? But I certainly have no complaints.
Oh, good, good.
It's been real. Oh, it's been great. It's been every writer's dream.
Well, that's tremendous. And I would also recommend The Nine, Inside the World, the Secret World of the Supreme Court. I love that book as well.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Appreciate it, Jeff. Thank you. Jeffrey Tubin from CNN, amongst many other places, and he's very busy right now in the midst of promoting what's happening. And that's tomorrow night, right?
Tomorrow night.
I got that right? Tomorrow night, FX.
That trial, I snuck over there a lot to watch it.
I forgot you were in L.A.
I was trying to case across the street, and it was the TV cameras was like the Super Bowl.
Right.
I bought a bunch of T-shirts, and then the cops took them away from me.
Where were you when the verdict came down? Were you back in Chicago?
No, I was in L.A.
You were still in L.A.?
Yeah.
I remember we were in a conference room, and I think that was the FM 100 probably. Yeah. And FM 100, which is, I don't even know what it's called now, 100.3. But it split along the same lines. You know, the African-American folks almost completely were, you know, fist pumping, and all the white folks had their jaws dropping.
Well, you know, Gil Garcetti, too, the DA then, instead of trying it out in Brentwood where the crime occurred, he brought it back and tried it downtown to make sure that they avoided any suspicion that they're trying to, you know, to rig it and get a more representative jury.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I was out there at the end of Rodney King, too.
Well, and that's, you know, talking about cell phone video, that was actually a video camera that somebody had. And now everybody can just pick up their phone. It's, look, for the 99.9% of cops that are good cops, it's never been harder to be a cop. So you fast forward 22 years later, and again, what's changed? It's not, we need to advance. Live from Des Moines, Caucus Day, and our host, ABC News Radio, taking nice care of us. And we appreciate that. I got a headline for you before we say hello to Aaron Kuchersky. This is from the Washington Post this morning. Donald Trump accidentally put money in the communion plate at a church in Iowa. You know, you thought after he brought out the Bible his mom gave him last night that maybe we were wrong. Turns out we weren't. I wonder if the two Corinthians were there to see that happen.
Born again Donald.
Ah, what a lovely thing. Aaron Kuchersky's here. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
When did you arrive in Iowa?
I got here on Wednesday, was here for the debate that Trump wasn't, and then we've been straight through. All the candidates have been lurching from place to place. You can't go anywhere in this state without seeing one.
Sure, and is there anybody that has grabbed your attention the most? Anywhere Trump goes, it's an event, obviously, but is anybody, you know, breaking through on the streets with folks?
You know, I think Trump and Sanders are the two names that you hear most often because they've been the ones to really energize people who've never done this before. And so it's new and it's fresh. And you wonder now, is it real? And we'll find out tonight if it is. I saw Hillary Clinton in the hallway a few minutes ago. She said, I slept an hour last night. She's just wired and excited. But she's been in this same spot before. But she nonetheless feels pretty confident because there's a palpable force working for her here. And that's people like her, older women who remember what it was like when women didn't have the right to vote, when they were disenfranchised, and they feel passionately about electing the first female president.
This thing has defied convention in so many different ways. The one thing that we all know is turnout's going to matter tonight. The folks that we've talked to on the street since we got here are all kind of right where you expect. If you find one in five that's really committed to going, a couple more that, well, I think so, and then a couple that are just telling you, can't make it. I got to work. I got to do this. I got to do that. What do you find?
And that's the problem with the caucus system. If somebody is scheduled to work, I was at the Drake Diner yesterday, and a woman said, I don't know if I can caucus because I have to work, and there's no option.
Right.
So there, you know, there's not like an absentee thing. And I met another woman who was the prototype Bernie Sanders voter, about 35, 36 years old, never caucused before. She said, I am so for Sanders. I really want him. I said, great. Are you going to caucus? She said, I don't know. And
exactly.
I said, what do you mean you don't know? Do you have something to do? She said, no, I just don't know if it makes a difference. Sanders would tell you, as he told us this morning on Good Morning America, it does make a difference. If they get a big turnout, he wins, he says. If they don't, he loses.
Pat Brady's here. Pat, what do you make of, and Aaron, the folks you've talked to as well, this notion of people, and again, this is not just a Midwestern thing, but it's kind of a Midwestern thing. The Democrats in particular, you're declaring an allegiance. You're telling people who you're going to support because of the way the caucus system sets up. Does that tamp down participation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't want to do that. But, you know, Republicans don't have to do that. But I think that slows people down a lot. But, you know, I had a quick question for you. I went to the Hillary rally last night and listened to her. I assume it's her stump speech. And there's not a whole lot of difference between her and Bernie on policy, which pushed her pretty far to the left. So if she pulls out of this, how does she tack back?
I think she'll tack back. They all tack a little bit center. But she has been forced to address more of the progressive agenda. But she's done it in a way that hits Sanders ever so gently. Because she hasn't come right out and said it, but she says, I'd rather under-promise and over-deliver. I would rather be a change agent that can get things done. And the implicit message there is that Sanders is full of these pie-in-the-sky ideas that are never going to go anywhere in Washington, whereas she knows how to work the system. And Bill Clinton said she is the best change maker I've ever known.
But does non-aspirational really work?
Well, that's just it. You can't really be
it's a long way from hope and change.
It is a long way from hope and change, and that's been her conundrum for 8 years now, is that she represents something of the past as she harkens back to the Clinton years, which people here remember fondly. Bill Clinton's the most popular politician in the state at 86%.
Well, the first 10 minutes of her speech are talking about her husband's presidency and Barack Obama and how much she's like him, and then she finally gets to her what she's going to do. It takes a long time.
It takes a long time, and she's hoping that people will want to continue the Obama years, but also, as she suggests, improve on them in areas of health care and in women's rights and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and I would say that's the one thing that's going to be hardest to tag back from, however, because in the general, if the Republican campaign speech is, do you really want another 8 years of the Obama presidency? And last night in that speech, he was very much locked into, he's done a wonderful job, and it felt like a continuation. Aren't you kind of writing the Republican speeches in that regard?
But that speech has been written since she started running for Senate in 2000. And, I mean, there's only two arguments in politics, right? Either you've never had it so good, or, you know, we need some change.
And
Hillary Clinton is trying to represent change while clearly representing a very much a status quo.
Do you go with the Des Moines Register from Saturday night as far as a gut feel goes?
That's always considered the gold standard here. But I do think there's room, certainly, for Sanders to win, and there's room for Trump to lose. The question for me is, if Trump does lose, who does he lose to? Is it really Cruz? Does Rubio have a decent night? And can you see Republicans coalescing around Rubio as the Trump alternative? I think if he finishes strong, and it has to be a strong finish, then Rubio's a factor. If not, it's hard to see how Trump doesn't run the table.
Above like a 24-25%.
Oh, like significant, yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be a big deal.
That'd be the story walking out of here, right?
It could be. It could be the story. Although the three words that you may very well utter tonight, Trump wins Iowa, that would just sound stunning.
It really would.
Given how ridiculed his candidacy was, but he's had staying power with voters.
Well, and again, if the two Corinthians caucus, I think he's going to be just fine. nice to see him.
Nice to see you.
All the best. Aaron Katursky, ABC News. He's got to run all over Des Moines. We're going to let him do that, and we'll come back with a big story next. Andrea's on the streets of Des Moines next on 720 WGN. We'll get to Andrea and the big story. She's on the streets of Des Moines. We'll find out where she is now on 720 WGN.
And, Steve, I am at Java Joe's. This is the place to be for more than 20 years. Most of the candidates have stopped here for a latte or a cup of coffee or cappuccino, mainly just a hobnob with the people. Senator Joni Ernst was just here, Rand Paul, Rick Santorum, all passing through. Sarah Palin is supposed to pass through as well this morning. It's a packed house here. And moments ago, Steve, I just spoke to Governor Terry Branstad.
A lot of good things going on here. Des Moines is a surprising place, a lot of construction. East Village is becoming really a neat place. I'm going to host the National Governors here this summer, July 14th through the 17th, so come back.
I will be there. Thank you.
Governor also says a big hello to Orion Samuelson. I mentioned Steve Cochran. He said who? I mentioned Andrea Darlis. He said who? Just mentioned Big O, Steve, and we're in like Flynn here. It's such a great small-town feel, too. I actually met a producer from CBS who has been covering the caucuses for 25 years, who's friends with Tom Peterson, so I made him buy me a cup of coffee for that. But everybody outside just hustling and bustling. This man is born and raised in Des Moines, says he caucuses every year.
Well, we're first in the nation. And that, you know, I always told my students, you got a 100% chance of shaking hands with a candidate. If you live in Chicago or San Francisco, you're one in 400,000. It's amazing.
So again, Java Joe's here, the place to be. I'm told that the soup of the day is potato soup. They're open all day for lunch if you can get a table, because really it is packed here. And again, such a small town feel, and really a feel of excitement in the air here on the streets of Des Moines, Steve.
And they're doing Morning Joe there on MSNBC. Is that why the crowd is as big as it is?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's part of the reason, too. There's an area blocked off for that, but everybody else can just come in and have a cup of coffee. The other guy I actually sat next to at the community table said he's been coming here every morning for his morning coffee, every day since it opened more than 20 years ago.
He didn't have one of those autographed yarmulkes on, did he?
No, he didn't, but I still have the Marco Rubio one. Someone heard the report, and I'm getting emails now saying, get me a Trump, get me a Rubio. The Trump are sold out.
Yeah. And by the way, Andrea is working. She can't just be buying autographed yarmulkes and bringing them back.
Right, exactly. I only have a limited amount of money to spend here.
Coming up, we're going to talk with Illinois State Senator Mike Connolly, who is doing his job for the Rubio campaign, to get a sense of how he feels Rubio is going to do today and tonight here in Iowa, and we'll come back with that. But why don't you do your big professional sign-off?
All right. Live from the streets of Des Moines, we're at Java Joe's. I'm Andrea Narlis, and that's this hour's big story from the caucuses.
Talk to Illinois State Senator Mike Connolly, who's here for the Rubio campaign, in just a second. I want to remind you, you can follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show all the time. Hashtag at IA Caucus for what we're doing. But if you want to get in touch with all the photos, nice picture of Andrea with the governor of Iowa. They're an adorable couple. And her friend earlier as well, who has the autograph yarmulkes and all the stuff and live blogging that's going on from Iowa. Go to WGNradio.com/election, and you'll get the full Grassley.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
Faithfully execute the office of President.
President.
President of the United States.
The United States.
So help me God.
Nobody covers 2016.
The candidates, the election, the decision.
Like 720 WGN. Back to the Steve Cochran Show live from the Iowa caucuses.
We are live in Des Moines, and the caucuses start tonight at 7. And joining us now is Illinois State Senator Mike Connolly, who's been in town for a few days and I'm sure back and forth from Iowa regularly, as you help the Marco Rubio campaign. What's your official title?
I guess I'm officially the co-chair with our friend Darren LaHood,
yep,
a congressman from Peoria. I guess I was the first one to contact the Rubio campaign way, way back when, and it kind of organically grew. And I got a call and said, by the way, you're now the chairman. And that's how it happened.
You raise your hand, you're in.
Yep. Congratulations. You just volunteered.
Yes.
Now, as you know, WGN has a huge presence in Iowa, and particularly in eastern Iowa, but well over to central Iowa and certainly here as well. So for the people listening in Iowa, give me a Rubio pitch.
The Rubio pitch, I like to tell the story on New Year's Eve. I mean, Pat and I know all about the petition process in Illinois. It's laborious, and that's being challenged.
Oh, no, it's so clean.
It's
so clean and never challenged.
It's laborious. And I was in the town of Durand, Illinois, which is, for Pat Brady, it's a driver and a pitching wedge from Wisconsin.
Not
for guys like
plays.
Us, it's a driver three-wood. Yeah. And we're at a bar with a group of us getting petitions, and we're having lunch. And half the bar were wearing Bears stuff, the other was Packers stuff, and I said, don't circulate here. This just isn't the right place to do it. And someone said, no, I'm going to try. And a guy went up and said, hey, would you sign this for Marco Rubio? And he says, well, tell me why. And he goes, well, that's Senator Connolly there. He's the chairman of the campaign. He can answer it. And I did my best to say, okay, what do I tell this guy who's just been out hunting and he's got a Packer thing on? And I said, it's real simple. Hillary Clinton will be on the dais for the Democratic Party. Marco Rubio, the son of a bartender and hotel maid who's just recently finished paying off his student loans, is the kind of person who can get to the middle-class independent voter. He's going to have a stark contrast from Hillary Clinton, who's made, what, $200 million since they left the White House broke. So there's a stark contrast there. Second, millennials. Millennials, there are more millennials today than there are baby boomers.
Yeah.
I have three of them. How do I know they were fired up about Marco Rubio? I don't tweet. I don't have the Ron Sandak disease, so I don't tweet much. And when the message went out that I was the chairman, I received a number of text messages from my children, their friends, and I was responding to them saying, why are you guys so into Rubio? We listen to his podcasts. He's from middle-class roots. He understands what average Americans are going through. And these are millennials. So I think that to make the pitch for the Republican Party, I think Marco Rubio is, and he's from a battleground state, for heaven's sake.
Well,
we have to win Florida.
There is, I think, no question amongst people who swim in these waters regularly that if he's not the most electable, I'm not sure who is. Having said that, he's got to pass the can you do the job test. So what about the argument that he's got no more experience quantitatively than Barack Obama had when he got the job? And the Republicans use that as an argument against Obama.
Well, actually, Marco Rubio served in the state legislature as the Speaker of the House of one of the largest states in the union. That takes some kind of political skill and acumen to be able to work within your caucus. So that's one thing. Secondarily, he's spot on the issues. I've been in any number of small group settings where he's going from Sarbanes-Oxley to the Alawite Sheikh in northern Syria who he has spoken to about the things that need to be done to get rid of ISIS. So I've seen it firsthand, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention I was at an event in Naperville, and Trey Gowdy was speaking for my friend Peter Roskam, and unsolicited, long before the endorsement, Trey Gowdy said, no one articulates conservative Republican positions better and more inclusively and in a positive way than my friend Marco Rubio from Florida, which, of course, prompted people to turn and look at me. And I was shaking my hand saying,
I didn't write it.
I didn't do it.
I didn't write it.
I didn't do it.
That's him.
I didn't do it. And my goodness, it would be nice if the entire country were conservative Republicans. I have news for people. They're not. We have to get that independent voter to come our way.
You're preaching to the choir here. I mean, that's my constant sermon. My sermon is, you're not the president of the Democrats. You're not the president of the Republicans. You're the president of the United States. And while this primary process, extended primary process, plays out, you'll get the far right and the far left. But the difference tonight, Pat Brady, is how many of those softer lefties and softer righties will turn up to vote, because if there's a large turnout, that could change everything.
Well, what maybe the question is this to you guys. What do you define as a win for Marco Rubio tonight?
Yeah, have you got a number in your head?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I just got a text from somebody of some news article that says just this morning that, you know, it's a dead heat between the three. I don't know what. To me, you listen to the pundits, you listen to this and that. I don't trust polls. Rick Santorum was in sixth place 4 years ago. I think Marco Rubio, I think at the end of today, there will be three candidates for the Republican nomination: Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and Marco Rubio. And we head to New Hampshire, South Carolina, Illinois, New York, and Florida with the decision. Which of these three do you want to be your standard bearer to defeat Hillary Clinton and prevent Barack Obama from becoming a Supreme Court justice?
In Illinois, we will have, at least from this standpoint or this far out, it appears to be a two-party process that will matter in the primary, and that's good for all of us.
I agree. I at the end of the day, I hope getting to Illinois, I'll say this, I've got 11 members of the General Assembly coming today to Iowa, some driving as far as 4 or 5 hours to speak on Marco Rubio's behalf, and I'll put my team in Illinois up against any of the other candidates, and these are young conservatives, Southern Illinois, suburban Republicans.
Hey, your list here. You got Jason Berrickman from downstate. I mean, you got a very diverse Murphy, Morrison, Eunice, Fortner, Wheeler, Davidsmeyer, Anthony, County, you, Dale Ryder. That's a pretty diverse section of the Republican Party in Illinois.
We do. We have people from different parts of the state, and also, Matt Murphy's the deputy leader of our caucus. And so I'm excited about it. It's, you know, we were with Senator Rubio last week in Chicago, and he said they fully intend that Illinois is going to be a major player. March 15th is going to be huge.
So you feel good about tonight?
I do.
All right, I'm not going to let you go without this. How do you feel about Springfield?
You know, it's sad when I met with Leigh Volkmer, who's a state senator from Wisconsin, and another state senator, Jack Whitmer from Iowa. And when they talk about being in the majority and having budgets done and being done by
April.
You
mean April, the regular stuff that you're supposed to do?
It's somewhat depressing, but I keep reminding them we have a Republican governor. Governor Rauner is there, and he's steadfast in his convictions, but he's ready to work something out. I hope... I hope we can get something
done
this
session.
Any
cracks in the Republican caucus in Illinois for support for Rauner? Anybody hedging on that?
Well, I don't know. I guess you could say Sam McCann in Southern Illinois went against the governor. But it's the governor, we all know where we have to go as a party and as a state.
You support his push for change?
I think most of the state of Illinois does.
What's the president's impact going to be coming in here next week to address you guys?
Well, it's interesting. If he takes the fair map and redistricting reform and term limits, I think you're going to see the Republican side of the aisle jumping up and down throughout his speech.
It's really rather awkward for Madigan and company because he just made that a point of his own speech to say we need redistricting and we need two or three things that are on the Rauner agenda, and then he's coming back to Springfield. It's a little awkward. In other words, I'm not sure Madigan and company are that wild about the president.
I don't know. I still don't know the calculation behind all this, but somebody's going to explain it to me, I guess, next week.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
The Marco Rubio candidacy gets a good test tonight. Obviously, he's going to be a player through the long game, but certainly you want a strong finish tonight. You'd love an upset.
Oh, we'd love that. And, you know, we're intending to do that. And you know, I've talked to all of the 11 folks coming over from Illinois, and I said, look, the locals here have said, because I asked them, are you going to be upset that so many Illinoisans are here? They said, no, we actually, you know, we really respect that you come to our state and show that type of commitment. And
they did it for Obama last time. They put busloads of people.
That's kind of what we plan to do. And we have a number of non-General Assembly people that are coming as well. Bobby Schilling, a retired congressman, will be in the Quad Cities area where he represented. So we're in to win.
You better be. Yeah. Hey, otherwise, you're just hanging around Des Moines with me.
FYI, Cochran's a lot better golfer than I am and hits it a lot
better. Next
time you come in here with an analogy, let's get the golf analogy right. MarcoRubio.com, is that the website you want to send folks to?
It is, Steve.
All right, nice to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break, come back, get your news in a couple of minutes. And coming up after the top of the hour, Matt Strawn, the former RNC chair for Iowa, who knows everybody in the state and has something on all of them. We'll talk to him in a second at 720 WGN.
WGN is live in Iowa, and the race to decide who will lead the greatest nation on earth is on. Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Matt Strong's here. We are live in Des Moines with our friends from ABC News Radio. And Rokan and Anna will do the Rokan Show this afternoon. Then we're back here tomorrow morning as well. Matt Strong's here, former RNC chair. Matt, is this like Christmas Day to you, or is this a sense of relief that it's almost over? What's your emotions?
Well, it's awesome, and I'm glad to see that the work release program is going swimmingly in Illinois.
It is for
You're
me.
Able to cross the border and come visit us.
Don't say anything. We're not supposed to be here.
Yeah. Well, Pat's got the ankle bracelet on, but it's got a long range.
Crossing that river.
Well, the problem with the Christmas analogy is I don't know what's under the tree yet.
Right.
Let's wait and
see where the dust
settles, whether it's a good thing or not.
So tonight we're going to attend a couple of the caucuses, but the one we're going to in particular is in what town, Pat?
Ankeny.
And Ankeny's how far away?
Matt.
I was looking at Brady.
Yeah,
Ankeny's about 25 minutes from downtown Des Moines. It's a northern suburb between Des Moines and Ames.
All right. So we've talked about the Republican versus the process for the Democrats as well. Because the Republican process is a little more straightforward, wouldn't you expect a higher turnout caucus to caucus? Because the percentages seem to be even, or depending on the candidates, the Democrats may be a little higher.
You know, it's interesting with the Democrat process, because it's so labor-intensive,
right,
with the viability thresholds across the state, it requires more organization, more bodies on the ground. So because of that, that's why they have historically had higher turnout than us. They actually have more staff on the ground working to push, pull, prod than Republicans have. And ours, you know, of course, as we've talked about, is just a simple secret ballot. Not even a ballot, it's a blank slip of paper that you can write a name on. And, of course, I have told the authorities in Ankeny's 13th precinct to make sure that Brady is properly sequestered when the vote. I know how you Illinois guys like to vote.
Right.
We're going to be there. Yeah, we're going to be there.
So we can't vote then. That's what you're trying to tell us?
Oh, yeah.
We can't vote? Okay. All right, if you say so.
Says who? Yeah, we'll wait and see.
As far as talking to the folks who are there at a caucus, we love Iowans, obviously. And we'll be nice to all of them. I don't want you to worry.
Well, and it's
do they have some sort of radar to detect Chicagoans when we're in the middle of that room?
Well, we'll find out tonight.
I guess we will. What is your sense of this? You've done this many times. We've talked again about all the conventions have been broken. Trump has stayed in Iowa one night. He's a hobby Christian. On the other side, Bernie Sanders has no religious affiliation whatsoever. Not that it's all about official religion, but that's a piece of the story. Is this a biggest surprise to you as it is to the rest of us?
It is, and you know, we could still be surprised in the next 12 hours. Let's see what happens once Iowans actually show up to caucus. Even this weekend, I was coming back from taking my fifth grader to basketball. A neighbor stops me and says, hey, are we going to stop him? And this is a neighbor that I don't normally talk politics with. I kind of, what are we talking about? Well, Trump. And then he explained he and his wife, for the first time ever, are going to caucus. And in his words, said, I just want to make sure there's at least two more votes against him. So,
that's,
you know, I was blown away. Now, that could be an outlier, but, you know, there's the passions on both sides of the Trump phenomenon are running hot right now, and I think this thing's going to be a nail-biter, and as we've talked about in the past, you know, the indicator to watch is turnout. The higher that goes, the more likely Trump has remade the electorate, where it's kind of diffused the support of the traditional evangelical Christian conservatives.
This is your town. This is your state. Is it true that Iowans decide late on caucus day?
Traditionally, they do. Your traditional Iowa caucus goers. Interestingly enough, though, most of Trump's support is pretty well locked in. He had the highest number of voters who were definitely going to caucus for him, with 70% in the Iowa poll this weekend. And there's a little more play in the Rubio and Cruz voters, which the buzz around town last night at the watering holes and at the restaurants downtown was a little bit more wind in Rubio's sails. So that could be one of your surprises coming into tonight.
Pat?
Okay, after Cochran and I get done disrupting this event.
After we're kicked out of the caucus today.
Occupy Ankeny.
Yeah, exactly. What is going to happen? Give us the blow-by-blow how this goes down.
Yeah, so once you arrive at the caucus site at 7 o'clock, we put the precinct chair, gavels it to order. The precinct chair is someone that I sleep with. It is my wife. So she will be running. I wanted to make sure that's clear.
Okay, good.
Well, let's hope we go to the right precinct. We go to one with a guy named Earl. It's going to be an issue.
They're progressive over here.
And then once it's gaveled to order, that's when the speeches start. Every presidential campaign has the opportunity for one person to stand up and speak on their behalf.
Is there a time limit on the speech?
Normally it runs 3 to 5 minutes.
Does everybody send someone?
They don't. Usually it's the test of a well-organized campaign that has somebody stand up. Some bring in out-of-state surrogates, like we've seen with these Illinois state representatives and senators that are coming over for Rubio. That is helpful, but often the best person to have stand up is someone that's a known commodity in that community. You know, the athletic director at the high school, the pastor of the church, the guy that sells insurance to everybody for generations.
Sure.
So that's where, when you see that, I could still change my mind on caucus night. Who you have stand up on your behalf is more important than even what they say.
And you're a secret vote, so you could switch and nobody, your guy standing next to you, is not going to know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So right before they vote, after the speeches are done, a little slip of essentially scratch paper, blank scratch paper, is handed out. You write a surname on the slip of paper. And in my precinct, at least last time, not making it up, red, white, and blue sequin shoebox was passed around the room.
Nice.
We dropped the ballot in there. I mean, how Norman Rockwell is that, man?
Nice.
You know, it's... And that's the process. And the votes.
We know how to fill those up.
Well, and here's the part you Illinois guys won't understand.
We're not going to bring in the slips pre-filled.
Exactly. Yeah, the votes are actually counted in front of everyone.
What?
So, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Right there in the room. They're counted in
you
front of
You got to take those in the back in case you have to redo the whole thing.
Right.
The concern tonight is there was that weather would diminish turnout. It doesn't look like that's going to be an issue at all, but it does look like snow could hit the western part of the state. What is that going to do?
You know, probably very little, and that's what I've tried to explain to some of these East Coast reporters that are out here, that it, quite frankly, it isn't so much the snow, it's the wind.
Right.
And what the visibility is in driving in western and northwest Iowa, which that's an area of the state, if Ted Cruz is going to overperform his numbers and win the caucuses, he needs to squeeze every single vote out of conservative, anti-immigration reform, you know, just anti-establishment northwest Iowa.
Now, Chuck Todd was on earlier, and he thought that that would benefit him because his people, he's more well-organized and they're more motivated than...
More dedicated, but more I still dedicated. Say if Grandma and Grandpa in particular, or, you know, whoever is a little skittish about driving in blizzard conditions, that would knock you back. So common sense would say if that's an area he has to have and weather could tamp down the turnout, it would hurt him. But Chuck thought it would go the other way.
Yeah, which I thought was an interesting take. So
well, and if Cruz's demographic is the traditional Iowa caucus goer, which skews much more towards seniors, and I'd agree with Steve that I think that's how it would cut.
Yeah. What do we look for? We get these rolling totals now. What should we look for early?
Well, results, start looking for the first real results starting to come in between 8 and 8:30 Central. Between 8:30 and 9 is when real critical mass comes in.
Are there key precincts? Like, I assume yours is a big one.
If there's a big Rubio surge up in Ankeny where we are, which is more of a center-right establishment conservative suburb of Des Moines, will be an indicator of whether the Bush-Christie-Kasich vote all decides to throw in behind Rubio. Some of our border communities, you know, you go up and down the river, Clinton, Burlington, Quad Cities, places Trump has been lately. If there's a huge turnout in those communities, that means we're going to see this Trump surge probably across the state.
The Bernie and Hillary fight is interesting, and if kids actually turn out to vote, because I don't know if you heard, they're all getting free college. If kids actually turn out to vote, that could be a huge problem for Hillary. But there's a world of difference between, hey, I tweeted my friend about it, so I did something, and actually showing up. Do you have any sense of how many millennials and how many kids, specifically 21 to 25-year-olds, are going to show up?
Well, especially with the students, you know, there's the unique challenge of the way the Democrats do their allocation. You know, it's not a one-person, one vote like we have in the Republican Party.
Proportional.
So they're going to try and get these students to leave campus for the night and go back to their communities around the state. And when you hear, that's where weather could come into play. And, I think we were all college students once. I don't know how motivated I necessarily would have been to drive back home for a night, to caucus. So I think it's a big question mark. Saw a lot of the Clinton senior leadership team in the state and nationally at the bar last night. So
that's
I don't know if
said.
That's
that
a
that was the buzz going around the campaign that the Little Rock's in town.
Yeah, and I think they're confident.
Hey, Steve and I want to whip up a Jell-O mold or a three-bean salad or something. Can we bring something tonight? Or?
You know what? In the true Lutheran tradition, we've got the potluck as well.
Oh, there is potluck.
Exactly.
Yeah, casserole to pass, that kind of thing.
Right, exactly.
Well, I know you haven't slept much in the past bit of a while. Do you go through a depression tomorrow when everybody heads for New Hampshire?
Yeah, we see the entrails of the plane as it's leaving while all these famous reporters forget our cell numbers for 3 years.
Before Anderson Cooper calls and goes, Matt, it's Coop, remember
right.
me? But it's got to be a little bit of relief to get your state back.
You know, it is. I mean, it's in all sincerity, it is an incredible privilege and opportunity we have that nobody else in the world, quite frankly, gets this opportunity. And it'll be nice to get our communities back, our TV channels back, our radio stations back. I'll introduce myself to the three little people that live in my house again that
right.
I haven't seen
right,
for,
right, right.
For a few weeks. But it's just it's a pretty cool experience, and it's awesome you guys came over to be part of it.
Well, let's give him some credit. Matt was a heck of a state party chairman here. He had a tremendous run under his guidance.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And we were actually talking about making a couple of trades, you to Illinois for a couple of legislators to be named later. Nice to see you, man.
Always good to see you,
thanks
buddy.
For the help. Appreciate it. We'll come back with more live from Des Moines. Steve Cochran, 720 WGN. Andrea Darlis will join us with another big story here in just a few minutes. She's found her way to a Des Moines juice bar where she's mingling with the locals. And again, if you want to see some of the pictures or catch with the live blog that's happening here, you simply go to WGNradio.com/election. And throughout the year, we will use that chunk of the website to bring you all the election coverage. As a matter of fact, speaking of Andrea, we're sending her to New Hampshire next week. So she'll be live in New Hampshire for that. Jeb Bush is one of the great mysteries here. The former governor of Florida, who now in Florida polling is getting throttled in his home state as well after being a very successful two-term governor, was thought to be a lock. It wasn't that long ago when this campaign first started and talk of Iowa first began that Bush was going to be the guy. But after a series of terrible debates, with the exception of the last one, where he got up, showed up, and got it done, it seems to be too little too late. The Jeb Bush campaign had more money going into this thing than just about anybody. He is funded largely by a super PAC that's backed by a former friend of the show, a guy named Mike Murphy. Who, Pat Brady, you know Mike. He's a great guy.
Oh, he's great, the best.
And Mike used to be a regular on Meet the Press, and Mike knows the game inside out.
He ran the McCain upset in 2000 in New Hampshire.
And Mike has to be, though I haven't talked to Mike about it, and obviously he's not going to talk about it today, but Mike has to be equally disappointed about missed opportunities, because you just have a feeling that if the Jeb Bush we saw last Thursday had shown up for the entire run here, we'd be talking about maybe a different story.
Well, you got the guy off the stage that was sucking all the air out of the room, and he just wasn't very effective going against him.
Yeah, but that's the thing that surprised me. It can't be the first time that Jeb Bush ran up against a blowhard of some kind.
But, he's 12 years from his last campaign.
And that makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, he makes a huge difference. Anybody would tell you that. But a big difference when the Donald's not on the stage.
Is there any chance, because there is a sense of a little bit of momentum for Rand Paul, is there any chance that you could see a millennial vote, a chunk of millennials show up for Rand Paul that could hurt Marco Rubio?
Yes, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think right now the wind at the back is with Rubio. But then we're going to go next week to New Hampshire, and it's going to be a completely different story. Right now the guy with momentum is Kasich.
Kasich is doing very well in New Hampshire. We had heard about a Chris Christie effect there. Has that waned?
A little bit. I think that comment he made to the kid about why aren't you down in New Jersey, he said, what do you want me to do, get a mop? That seemed to stop it. But it seems Kasich's picking up all the endorsements of the newspapers that are influential.
On the Democrat side, Sanders, as in Bernie, continues to draw huge crowds. He has tons of kids. But his message is simple and sort of click your heels because, much like the same slam I've hit Donald Trump on forever, there's almost nothing in the Trump promises that can realistically get done.
The difference is, though, just from watching...
But what can Bernie Sanders get done is my point.
I agree completely. Nothing. None of what he talks about. But the difference in... when watching Hillary Clinton last night, which is a very workmanlike speech, and she's talking about tax diversions and things that are over the crowd, so there's nothing really aspirational or inspirational, versus Bernie, who talks about all this stuff that most people that follow this know none of it's going to happen, but they walk away more fired up. Last night, there were people leaving halfway through her speech. It was just very workmanlike. Now, she may have been preaching to the national television audience and not the crowd there, because there were a lot of donors there, but it certainly wasn't inspirational in the way that Bernie's been.
And if anybody, I know we got to go to a break here, but if anybody thinks that there's a lot of folks just picking on Hillary, if you're a huge Hillary supporter, one thing you have to accept is this email thing is real. It's a real problem for her. It's a legitimate investigation, and it's not going to go away immediately. And when you think about this, I don't know if God's gotten to the practical joke stage, but when you think about the fact that Hillary Clinton is probably, if it's not Jeb Bush on the Republican side, Hillary Clinton certainly qualified by way of experience, what she's been around and what she's seen to do the job. What if there were a criminal investigation that led to her having to remove herself from the race? Then everything's up for grabs.
Yeah, I mean, she is under criminal investigation right now. And you know how these things work. They tend to start leaking out before something happens, but we'll see.
How is she doing on money? Plenty?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of money going around.
Bernie Sanders has raised a ridiculous amount of money as well, $20 million last month.
A lot of money in politics these days.
We'll take a break, come back, we'll get the latest big story from Andrea somewhere at a juice bar in Des Moines in just moments, and then we'll get Rokan and Anna DeVlantis over here as well.
All talk.
The Steve Cochran Show.
No action.
And no good rotten traitor.
This guy's favorite radio broadcast.
You're right about that.
Has traveled to Iowa.
I think they made a mistake.
To bring you live coverage of the Iowa caucuses.
A total lightweight.
Back to Chicago's top-rated morning show.
Here's a guy, he's registered zero in the polls. Zero.
On 720 WGN.
For some reason, some people don't get it.
That's right. I'm Donald Trump's favorite talk show host.
Oh, that is spectacular.
Well done, Mr. Duffy. I saw a statistic yesterday. Well, first off, the Washington Post story, you guys may have missed this morning, that Trump yesterday at church somehow got confused. And I know you're saying Trump confused in a church, but Trump yesterday at church put money in the communion plate.
Okay, so the story goes like this.
Oh, you know the story?
Yes.
Okay.
The story goes that they do the communion on a silver plate,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh.
And Melania, when she was in line ahead of him, knew immediately what to do. She took the wafer, and he's digging in his pocket trying to pull out money to put it in the plate. And he cops to it, and he says, you know, I thought it was the offering. I didn't know. I had no idea. You know,
I did put a lot of money in because I'm rich and it's huge. It's huge.
Oh, my God.
I saw a statistic yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds low to me, but somebody quantified all of the tweets that Trump has sent out since he joined the campaign.
Yeah, mm-hmm. New York Times said it.
1 in 8 were insults. Doesn't that sound low? I would think 7 of 8 are insults.
Well, I would say 7 of 8 are him complimenting himself.
Well, that's true. You do have to factor that in.
Yes. Yeah, that's at least half. More than half. It's got to be more than half.
Rokan and Anna DeVlantis are here. You guys will be here this afternoon, and then you're going to go to a caucus, which is pretty much downtown Des Moines-ish.
Mm-hmm. We do everything downtown Des Moines-ish.
Yeah, mm-hmm. because you're going to be rushing off the air to get to it, because, look, we're the interlopers. You know, it's not like they're going to smell Chicago coming.
Well, I got to say, we were just over at the Walgreens because that's, you know, where I do all my best work.
Yeah.
And we were talking to the
cashier lady.
By the way,
us?
Do you guys do everything together? I'm just curious. You just walk together
well,
to the Walgreens?
Well, I ran into her here. She was already down
here. I was here waiting
watching for you.
He said, I got to go to Walgreens. I said, I'm game for that. So we went over there.
It could be fun.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
An adventure.
Like you could find one in Chicago.
No, they're very hard to find in Chicago, but they have, it's a very special thing here in Des Moines. And so we talked to the, you know, oh, you're here for the caucuses, you know, and yeah.
You're not around from around here.
You're not from around here. We got that. Yeah. And I said, well, may we ask who you're going to caucus for?
And
she went, I would say it was a good 2 minute sort of wind up about what
the line's getting really long behind us,
right? What a jagweed
Trump is. Mm-hmm. I'm not voting for that guy. And then she goes through all this stuff. And then Donald Trump, she lets us know the payoff. She is going to vote for. And now we're still waiting on it. And the line's in back. Literally, there's a man, I think, died in line in back because he had turned.
He's a nice guy. He wasn't going to interrupt. She was telling the story.
That's how they are in Iowa. Have you noticed?
He was having a grabber, but he wasn't going to ask for his heart medicine in the middle of telling the story.
No.
She's going to tell us who you're caucusing for. Right. Anyway, then she says she's going to vote for Hillary Clinton. And then Anne asked, were you there? We were at this event last night for Hillary.
Yeah, right.
And she goes, no. But they knew everything about it. She knew everything about it.
She did.
Oh, Lincoln High School, Bill and Chelsea were there.
Well, this is interesting, though, that you walked into the that guy's got to be stopped crowd, because we had a guest on earlier who had a neighbor who never talks politics. Are we going to stop him? Is there enough of a block out there that is so anti-Trump? And, of course, I'm not one of them, as you know. Anti-Trump that they would be willing to go out and caucus for anybody but him, even if they don't have a choice.
You feel that. Even this woman we talked to said he's so arrogant he doesn't represent our values. And I think that's an interesting point, because you would wonder, the people of Iowa, the appeal of Trump. You would think that he's not like them, although you've seen in the polls that people still are supporting him.
That's right. That's the question then, right? The question then is, this is the whole answer to the Trump thing tonight. Will the number of people who are following Trump because he's a human bug light, will those people be a bigger number than the number that want to stop him? That's the entire math for tonight.
I think I want to continue that analogy. Does that mean when you get too close to him, you just vaporize? Because that is sort of what it is.
Yeah.
It was interesting last night after the rally. Mr. Brady, you know him, Pat Brady.
I haven't met him.
Long suffering head of the Illinois Republican Party.
Yes.
Said, "Hey, I want you to see something," and he took me over to a one of the hotel bars downtown. And
shocked that he knew where that was.
Yeah. And it was crawling with media and political types. And what is so amazing about this, and I've never covered a caucus, the Iowa caucus before, but at conventions and things like that, it's the same deal. You know, a lot of horse trading and information trading and stuff goes on at the bar after the whole thing is over. And you also get a lot of eye rolling. And that was the interesting thing last night, because there was a Trump guy there who was working for him, and and everybody's got a roll in their eye at this guy, and he was just taking it. It's like, what, you know? And this is like a very slick professional who's working.
One of them New Yorkers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somewhere from the East Coast, I can tell you that. And a very slick guy, and he's like, you know, we'll see. But you know what? You know the funny thing is, I think that a lot of these people who are supporting Trump that are like either his friends or people who work for him or people. This is a guy who just got brought on for the campaign, who's a professional at this. I think they know that this isn't real. You know, that I think they know that this.
Well, we
can't
talked
go the
about
distance.
This. I think the other day, and I'll let you go on this because you guys will be back here to do the show this afternoon.
Oh, we got all time. We got a break.
We got to go.
He's just being nice.
I don't think he wants the gig. I still don't think he wants the gig. Mm-hmm. And I think he has. I think that one of the truest statements he's made, and I think it was this weekend when he said, "I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I don't even have to campaign anymore. I can't believe how popular I am." I think he's loving this attention. He's such a psychological whack job, nutcase narcissist that he has no idea how he got this big, and now he has no idea how to get out of it.
Well, do you see his speeches? His speeches are all about just winning. There's very little message in them that we've seen here in Iowa over this week. It is about let's win. We need to win. It's like, well, it's about more than winning.
Well, if you're such an attention whore that this is your crack cocaine, how do you get off it?
Don't.
You don't.
I mean, this somehow doesn't have a good end.
Yeah, we're worried.
Either for him or America.
We're all going to be vaporized.
We're hoping for the blizzard tomorrow to take us all. It's Ro Khanna, Anna DeVlantis back this afternoon at 3, right from here in Des Moines. Andrea Darlis back. Jump over here, Andrea, before we go. We'll talk to Andrea next about all the new friends she made in Des Moines this morning. And she'll be on with you this afternoon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, cool. Come on.
Action packed.
720 WGN. Big shot political operative Brian Biggs just texted me the new Quinnipiac University, Iowa poll. Rick Santorum and Chris Christie, not great, 1% of the vote, or 1% popularity in this poll. Fiorina and Kasich, only 2%. Remember when Fiorina was hot for 10 minutes?
I do, yeah.
You know where I truly believe this. You know where I think Fiorina went off the rails?
After
is
the...
when she made Planned Parenthood defunding her number one issue.
Oh, I think so, too. We're talking about this yesterday,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, because there are so many women in mm-hmm. this country who use Planned Parenthood for general health care.
Right.
And to say I'm going to defund it completely without any solution to it, she took an issue that women, I think, could have coalesced around her. She didn't have to support Planned Parenthood.
Right.
But to make that her number one target, I think, really hurt her.
No, I completely agree. And to focus on that as being simply a place to have an abortion,
yeah, it's not, it, it's just
not true at all. No.
Mike Huckabee at 3%. The biggest surprise that jumps out of this Quinnipiac poll is that Rand Paul, who yesterday in some polls was 12 and 13%, 4%. Because the notion that Rand Paul could hurt Marco Rubio was part of the discussion this morning.
When I saw him at Java Joe's, you know, he was very, very, very calm and nonchalant. He didn't talk to me personally, but.
Yeah, I've had many conversations with him. He's different.
He is,
he's different. Yeah. He's different. Carson holding at 8, Rubio at 17, Cruz at 24, and Trump at 31.
Yeah.
So that's from Quinnipiac. Nice job by you out there this morning. Did you have fun meeting all the Iowans?
I did. I had a great time. Hung out with the governor. Met Joni Ernst, which was very cool.
Is the tie with Orion there? Because you and I talked about that. Isn't it Orion knows Joni Ernst's parents or something?
No, I didn't ask him, Joni Ernst, about him. I asked the governor, Branstad, about him. And I said, well, WGN in Chicago. And
Orion Samuelson.
I said, for the Cochrane Show. Yeah, he said, oh, Orion Samuelson, tell him hello. He said he's a friend of the all farmers and agriculture.
Right.
And, yeah, he knew him. And but he did invite us back. He said he's hosting a meeting of all the governors in the nation this summer, and he wants us all to come back.
Well, of course he does. Why wouldn't he? Yeah, and Branstad has come out hard against Ted Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see how much weight that carries. But as of now, another 7-pointer in the latest poll from Quinnipiac, and Trump with that solid lead. So I still think we've got it, though. And Anna DeVantis is here.
Yeah.
I think what we were talking about a second ago, and I don't know if you heard it, will there be enough anti-Trumpers coming out tonight, whether they even have a favorite candidate or not, to stop Trump? Is there a stop Trump movement?
So you mean they'll vote for somebody just not
anybody
to have
Trump
in?
Is there an anybody
I think
but
so, yeah,
is there an
that
anybody
movement.
But Trump movement mm-hmm. that can somehow cut into the Trump knuckleheads that are going to go out?
Anything is possible, and the cool thing about caucusing is that you could change your mind
at any point.
Second. Yeah,
I was just telling Andrea, when you look at the Des Moines Register front page, the second sentence on the front page is, "We will all know the answer to Mr. Trump's question, how stupid are the people of Iowa?"
That's a legitimate quote from him.
Awful. From Awful. Longtime Iowa Republican activist Richard Rogers. That's what he says will be answered tonight here in Iowa.
We'll see.
You guys back at 3?
We are.
All right. Rokan with Anna DeVantis, 3 o'clock. We will be back here tomorrow morning to do it again from the Iowa caucuses. Bill and Wendy coming up. Stand by for that. And thank you again to everybody back at the tower for today. Ross Cochran, was it Bob Ferguson? Bob and Ben and everybody else taking care of business back there. And thanks to Kevin and all the voices you heard on the air, including our guests and Pat Brady. Pat Brady, big help this morning as well, and Jeff and everybody from ABC News. Well, to talk about what they're going to be doing this afternoon, we continue live from Des Moines. Thank you again to our friends at ABC News Radio. Steve Cochran Show continues on 720 WGN.